Welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Tazria Rishon, the first Aliyah in Parshas Tazria. Our Aliyah is 13 Sukkim long, running from Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Aleph to Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Hey. There are 67 total Sukkim in our Parsha as a whole. Our Aliyah has 13 of those Sukkim. It's worthwhile noting that most of our Parsha is Perek Yud Gimel, the 13th Perek in Meseches. In Sefer Vayikra. What is interesting is that Perek Yud Beis deals, it was a very short perek over here at the very beginning of Aliyah, which deals with childbirth, and there afterwards we start hearing about Tzaraas, which is this spiritual disease, which is described for the rest of the parasha. We're going to focus on the first part, or really the Perek Yud Beis part of it, which is the childbirth aspect of it, and then we're going to move on to the Tzaraas and the coming Aliyahs, which there'll be plenty to talk about. So a basic overview of our Aliyah is we hear about when a woman will have a child, Kisazria v'yolda zachar, and if she has a male child, then for 7 days she'll be in a state of impurity, and then on the 8th day there will be this circumcision for the boy, and thereafter there'll be 33 days of purity. That means to say, even if there is any bleeding, that is bleeding which is yemei tahara, which is pure days of purity. Then we hear about if it's a dekeva, if it is a girl who is born, then the pure period of impurity is double and the period of purity is also double. So it's 14 days of impurity and it's 66 days of purity that continue afterwards as well. This is a description of the process of childbirth and the korbanos necessary to be brought afterwards. One is a korban ola and one is a korban chatas. One is a burnt offering, and one is a sin offering as well. We then start hearing about a person who gets on their skin some sort of disease, whether it's a seis or sapachas or baheres, different forms of splotch or a risen area or a different type of spot. We'll discuss some of those details later on. And then this person comes to the kohen and presents his case in front of the kohen. The kohen will examine it, and if it in fact has a particular shade of white, or if it's a particularly deep-looking thing, the coin will lock the person up and see them after 7 days. We'll discuss those in more greater detail in the coming aliyahs. What we're going to focus on right now is a few basic points. Number one is, what is the sequence of the parashiyas? Why is this parasha right here, right now? So it is interesting to note that that Rashi quotes a medrash in the name of Rabbi Simlai, who says a very important idea, and that is, Keshem shiyitzirosa shel Adam achar, call behema chayav oif b'maaseh bereishis. Just as the creation of humanity was the capstone of creation, came after all the other creations, all the other animate objects, kach toras on his parasha, achat toras behema chayav oif. That's why the Torah, the laws pertaining to the human beings, after the animals and birds. So that makes sense. That's why we discussed the purity and impurity of animals in the previous parasha. Now we talk about the purity and impurity of human beings. First in the idea of childbirth, then we're going to see through Tzaraas, and then we're going to discuss other purities and impurities of human beings. A few basic questions to ask, and that is this, it seems to be an interesting, you know, the laws of purity and impurity of human beings seem to be important laws, but are they really called Tzaraas Adam? They're the laws of the human being. Is that really what governs that? That's a hallmark characteristic of what a human being is the way they become pure and impure. Is that really a correct, we'll call it, reflection of their essence at all? So it comes down to perhaps a very basic idea, and that is the following. Let's think about an animal. Is an animal pure or impure? Is it tame or tahar? Well, the answer is it depends what kind of animal. Certain animals, let's say a cow, is a behema tahara, is a pure animal. And certain animals, let's take a lion, is a impure animal. It is a behema tamea. No matter what you do to a lion, it will not be able to be eaten. A cow can be rendered inedible by shooting it, or by if it has a terminal disease, but if one shechts it, it would be considered a behemah tahara. Intrinsically, it is a pure animal. Now the question becomes is, what about the human being? Is a human being pure or impure? And the answer is, it depends. It really depends on when, what. They can put themselves in situations in which they can become impure. They can put themselves in situations where they can extradite themselves from that impurity and become pure again. That means to say that a human being is dynamic as opposed to an animal. An animal is fixed. A human being has the ability and capacity to change. A person can go to the mikveh. A person can go through the process of the ashes of the parah adamah to purify themselves. They can put themselves in the oil amase, in the place and location which will make them impure. It all depends on what they do. Therefore, in a certain sense, the laws of purity and impurity about animals and about human beings actually is pretty reflective on the difference and the distinction between what they are in essence. The human being in their creation was after the animals to distinguish them from the animals, and so to their Torah, their purity and impurity also comes afterwards to distinguish, which is why Parshas Tazria follows Parshas Shmini, which talks about the laws of the animals and their purity and impurity. Now it's talking about human beings who can choose to be in situations and choose to leave those situations. Another important point to think, a very spiritual point to contemplate in Arlia, is the notion that there are two words used to describe the process of childbirth over here. Isha ki sazria, from the word zera, which means seed, conception, v'yolda azachar, and she gives birth to a child. It's worthwhile noting, as the Orach Chaim al Kodesh points out, that there are two stages of the human creation process. There is the conception, that is when the initial creation of the biological two cells meet each other and are able to start splitting and create a human being with information embedded into the DNA of those cells. And then there is the birthing process, which is 9 months later. The Orach Chaim al Kodesh points out that there's a significance, obviously, in the human world given to the birth process, but there's also a great significance which is given to the conception process as well. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh describes that there's a spiritual creation process which is at the beginning as well, which is why we'll see things in the Gemara that at the time of conception, thoughts that are had by people are essential to the spiritual formation of that child that will be as well. Orach Chaim HaKadosh talks about, in fact, how it is when it describes when Avram and Sarah pre their birth of their first child Yitzhak. It describes how when they went on their journey in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, it talks about nefesh asher asu b'charad, the souls they made in Charad. What does that refer to? So we typically understand it about Rashi's interpretation that it refers to all the people that they brought closer to monotheism. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh suggests another possibility, and that is that although they did not have the Yolda, they did not have the end of the process of having a child out of any of times that they were together as a husband and wife, nonetheless, there were souls which were created through that. That's the nefesh asher asu b'charad, that conception, even without the outcome of the process of Yolda, is very significant, and certainly even more so in the case where there is at the end of the process which is birth. So it's a very important point that Judaism does not take this whole process to be something which is simply a place of entertainment and pleasure, but it is rather actually a very sacred, a very holy process with which one's thoughts are significant in the formation, the spiritual formation of the souls that come to this world. Very important to understand this comes from our Aliyah. Another question or point to ponder is, what is the significance of Bris Milah? Here we hear about the focus of Bris Milah. The Midrash Tanchuma quotes a very, very important story here. At the beginning of our parasha, it's a discussion we had between Tinius Rufus, which is as described in the Midrash as Turnus Rufus, and Rabbi Akiva. So Turnus Rufus says, who are better? Whose actions are better, the actions of human beings or the action of God? He thought Rabbi Akiva was a very frum Jew, and he would answer him by saying, of course, God's actions are great. So Rabbi Akiva actually disappointed him by saying the actions of human beings, basar v'dam, flesh and blood. He said, surely can a human being ever create the earth and the heavens? And Rabbi Akiva said to him, well, actually, there is tell me something which is in the realm of the human beings to create. So he says, oh, you know, I was going to ask you, what about Bris Milah? Why about circumcision? Meaning, God created the human being perfect, and then comes along the Jewish people and say, well, we're going to make this a little amendment. Who's better? You think you can do better than God and the human being on the human form? So Rabbi Akiva says to him, well, take bread. Do you prefer bread or wheat? What's better, the manufactured product or the raw wheat, which is unprocessed? So what Rabbi Akiva was essentially saying to Turnus Rufus is that, yes, God did make the world somewhat imperfect because he was inviting a human being into the equation to help make it more perfect. God made the world 97% complete, but he allowed the 3% for human beings to take that. And that is the sign given to this little baby at birth, is that you're going to continue God's creation. You're going to continue the process because God wanted it to be that you're part of that process as well. Now, one of the important questions in our Aliyah to focus on is the period of purity and impurity. Why is the period of impurity and purity for a girl double that of a boy? So Rav Hirsch points out that it seems to be very clear that the period of impurity after childbirth for a boy, which is at the very least 7 days, today, of course, it's a little bit different than as is described in the raw Torah. And the Torah Shavuot Sabbath requires going through the sugyas and understanding how Yemei Tahara work today. But be it as it may, just in terms of just looking at the actual very clear text over here and just what it says over here, it sounds like there's 7 days, 33 days for a boy, and then 14 days and 66 days for a girl. So why is it double? So the Rav Hirsch points out, it seems that the days of impurity for the birth of a boy are ended or capstoned by the eighth day, which is the Bris Milah. So Rav Hirsch reasons that, therefore, in a case where there is a girl that's born, there's no Bris Milah, there needs to be a double period. Why is that? So he points out that Tumah, of course, is not about something which is physically unclean or some sort of physical deformity. We're talking about a spiritual, we'll call it moral vacuum. There's something which is, it's almost like there's a vacuum in this world of godliness, of holiness in this state. And that can be corrected by for a boy when the circumcision is done to that boy, because there's a certain sense of a spiritual mastery of the physical and material being, the prowess in the being. That can amend that. When it comes to a girl and that amendment is not made, then the purity and the impurity process is doubled, because it's not just for the mother, it's for the child as well. The second set of 7 days of impurity is a function as of the child's experience of it, not just the mother's, of this period, of this vacuum. It is worthwhile noting that one way of looking at Tumah and Tahara is the vacuum of creativity, of the possibility of creativity. And at this point in time, that's why Aviyah Voisah Tumah, the most centralized expression of Tumah, is a dead body. And so in this particular instance, where we talk about over here, where there's this sort of, there's the birth of life, but there's at the same time, there's the loss of capacity of potential creativity. Well, that's doubled when it comes to the creation of a little baby girl, because now, since the baby girl inherently has a higher level of potential holiness because of the ability biologically to create more, therefore there's a greater void of Tumah remains after her birth. So because of the higher capacity of contributing, of creating more life, the greater void at the beginning over here as well, which explains the double Tumah and the double Tahara as well. A lot to think about, a lot to appreciate in this very complex topic. With this, we conclude the first Aliyah of Parshas Tazria.